New heading, The Power of a Paradigm. The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People embody many of the fundamental principles of human effectiveness. These habits are basic. They are primary. They represent the internalization of correct principles upon which enduring happiness and success are based. But before we can really understand these seven habits, we need to understand our own paradigms and how to make a paradigm shift. Both the character ethic and the personality ethic are examples of social paradigms. The word paradigm comes from the Greek. It was originally a scientific term and is more commonly used today to mean a model, theory, perception, assumption, or frame of reference. In the more general sense, it's the way we see the world. Not in terms of our visual sense of sight, but in terms of perceiving, understanding, interpreting. For our purposes, a simple way to understand paradigms is to see them as maps. We all know that the map is not the territory. A map is simply an explanation of certain aspects of the territory. That's exactly what a paradigm is. It's a theory, an explanation, or model of something else. For instance, suppose you wanted to arrive at a specific location in central Chicago. A street map of the city would be a great help to you in reaching your destination. But suppose you were given the wrong map. Through a printing error, the map labeled Chicago is actually a map of Detroit. Can you imagine the frustration, the ineffectiveness of trying to reach your destination? You might try to work on your behavior. You would try harder. You'd be more diligent. You'd double your speed. But your efforts would only succeed in getting you to the wrong place faster. You might even work on your attitude. You would think more positively. You still wouldn't get to the right place, but perhaps you wouldn't care. Your attitude would be so positive, you'd be happy and contented wherever you were. The point is, you'd still be lost. The fundamental problem has nothing to do with your behavior or your attitude. It has everything to do with having a wrong map. If you have the right map of Chicago, then behavior or diligence becomes important. And when you encounter frustrating obstacles along the way, then positive attitudes can make a real difference. But the first and most important requirement is the accuracy of the map. Each of us has many, many maps in our head, which can be divided into two main categories: maps of the way things are, or realities, and maps of the way things should be, or values. We interpret everything we experience through these mental maps. We seldom question their accuracy. We're usually even unaware that we have them. We simply assume that the way we see things is the way they really are, or the way they should be. Then our attitudes and behaviors grow out of those assumptions. The way we see things is the source of the way we think and the way we act. And interestingly, if you look at it deeply, the way we see things is often a product of the things we seek or our deeper motivations. It has been useful to me, in order to teach this basic idea, to give people an experience where I split a room in half, showing one picture, let's say, of an old woman to one side and another picture, let's say, of a young woman to the other side. They only see these pictures for 1 second. Then I show them a third picture, which is a composite of both an old woman and a young woman, to everyone, again for 1 second, and ask them what they see. With a few exceptions on both sides, they see as they were conditioned to see by the first picture, which reinforces the whole idea that we do not see the world as the world is, we see the world as we are. That is, the way we have been conditioned and how that conditioning experience causes us to interpret the world accordingly. It would be analogous to internalizing a map. Then I have both sides communicate with each other and encourage them to communicate until they can come to see both the old woman and the young woman. It's always a fascinating experience to watch that process. Because they were aware that there was another person there they did not see, they were open, and the communication processes worked. And within a short period of time, everyone could see both. But if they were unaware that they had been conditioned and that the other side saw something else, then the communication processes deteriorated. And people even got into name-calling and character assassination. All because of a one-second difference. I frequently use this perception demonstration in working with people and organizations because it yields so many deep insights into both personal and interpersonal effectiveness. It shows, first of all, how powerful the conditioning in our lives affects our perceptions, our paradigms. If a second can have that kind of impact on the way we see things, what about the conditioning of a lifetime? The influences in our lives, family, school, church, work environment, friends, associates, and current social paradigms such as the personality ethic, all have made their silent, unconscious impact on us and help shape our frame of reference, our paradigms, our maps. It also shows that these paradigms are the source of our attitudes and behaviors. We simply cannot act with integrity outside of them. We simply cannot maintain wholeness if we talk and walk differently than we see. For instance, if you are among the 90-95% who typically see the young woman in the composite picture when conditioned to do so, you undoubtedly found it difficult to think in terms of trying to help her cross the street. Both your attitude about her and your behavior toward her had to be congruent with the way that you saw her. This brings into focus one of the basic flaws of the personality ethic. To try to change outward attitudes and behaviors does very little good in the long run if we fail to examine the basic paradigms from which these attitudes and behaviors flow. This perception demonstration also shows how powerfully our paradigms affect the way we interact with other people. As clearly and objectively as we think we see things, we begin to realize that others see them differently from their own apparently equally clear and objective point of view. Where we stand depends on where we sit, which is a way of saying how our role in life affects our paradigm, which then affects our behavior. The essence, therefore, of being truly objective is to realize that we are subjective and take steps to compensate for that. The truly subjective person is the one that thinks that he or she is objective. Each of us tends to think that we see things as they are, that we are objective. But this is not the case. We see the world not as it is, but as we are, or as we are conditioned to see it. When we open our mouths to describe what we see, we in effect describe ourselves, our perceptions, our paradigms. When other people disagree with us, we immediately think something is wrong with them. But as the demonstration shows, sincere, clear-headed people see things differently, each looking through the unique lens of experience. This does not mean that there are no facts. In the demonstration, two individuals who initially have been influenced by different conditioning pictures look at the third picture together. They are now both looking at the same identical facts, black lines, white spaces, and so forth. And they would both acknowledge these as facts, but each person's interpretation of these facts represents prior experiences, and the facts have no meaning whatsoever apart from the interpretation. The more aware we are of our basic paradigms, maps, or assumptions, and the extent to which we have been influenced by our experience, the more we can take responsibility for these paradigms, examine them, test them against reality, listen to others, be open to their perceptions, thereby getting a larger picture and a far more objective view. This is why good scientists always submit their hypotheses, their methods, and their results to other independent scientists to see if their hypotheses are replicatable.